This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
Welcome to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show, and I am not Matt McNeil. I'm Todd Mickelson, and the reason I'm here instead of Matt is a big mystery that he's going to reveal tomorrow on his show, so you have to tune in to find out why I'm here and why Matt's not here today. I don't know why he's not here, but I'm glad to be sitting in for him. I have a lot of fun on these shows, and Patrick is with me today. And working the board, and we'll see. I just threw together a whole bunch of stuff. Now, of course, there is the war going on in Ukraine, and I know that that has taken up a lot of people's brain space, and of course, because it's a huge deal. But there are a lot of other things that have been neglected because of that, and I would like to talk about those things. I'm not going to cover the war in Ukraine because I don't have any like my own correspondent out there. I haven't been there. I'm just basically getting what a lot of what you're getting as well. It's very interesting. Of course, a lot of it is just horrific, And it's hard to watch. It's hard to see. It's hard to know that that is going on. But as far as tactically, it sounds like it's not going very well for Saddam Putin. So it might be the downfall of him, which, you know, a lot of times it's sort of like a you got to die before you go to heaven kind of situation. I hate to say it because it's such a horrible thing. But in the end, who knows what changes it might bring to the world. But we're not here to cover that. We're here to cover a whole bunch of other stuff, both nationally and in Minnesota, because it's, I would say there's even more going on now than there was at last time I was here. I think last time I was here was something like November. I don't know. Do you remember, Patrick? I think it was something like November when I was here last.
Yeah, something like that, but I can't really remember the last time. The last time I feel like I saw you was last fall, which earlier than November, but it may have been something like that.
Yeah, something like that. But it's really fun to be back for me. Maybe I'll try and ad lib a little bit of Casey Kasem's countdown of the dumbest things Republicans have done this week. Now the countdown could be like 200, counting down the top 200, because it's crazy. And a lot of it happened just today and some yesterday as well at the hearing for the new Supreme Court Justice. Ketanji, I always am afraid I'm going to say her last two names wrong. I remember it's not Jackson Brown, it's Brown Jackson. So Ketanji Brown Jackson, and she's just really performing incredibly, mostly by not absolutely standing up and throwing the table over when she has to sit there and listen to some of the stupidity that maybe we'll cover. Maybe Casey Kasem will be here to cover it with us. Yeah, there's a lot to talk about with that. But also, I was even listening to it in the car on the way here. I usually listen to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, when I'm in the car. But today, I have to admit that I was listening to the coverage of the hearings. And they were talking a lot. You know, they're trying to get her on a whole bunch of things. They're trying to get her on CRT, which is just stupid. The interesting thing is that the Republicans they're not together on their strategy whatsoever. One of them's talking about CRT. One of them's talking about that she's too soft on child pornography offenders. One of them is talking about Second Amendment. And that's what I was going to talk about. Another thing, they talk about the living Constitution. You know, Republicans think that, well, it vacillates, but right now they think that the Constitution is to be interpreted exactly the way it was written in 1787, and there's no room for change. Well, of course, that would mean that women still would not be allowed to vote and a lot of things like that. Now, really, when you take it all the way back, the reason women would not be able to vote is because that was an amendment to the Constitution that got passed and ratified in 1920. That's the first time women were able to vote. And it was a constitutional amendment that happened 144 years after 1776, at least. I guess it was 100 and... I don't know. I can't do math in my head right now. But, do the math, 1920 minus 1787. Doesn't matter. You know, well over 100 years. And so why would you not then go all the way and argue to say, well, women should not be able to vote? Then, actually, guess what else is an amendment to the Constitution? The Second Amendment. It's called an amendment. It's the Second Amendment. It's not part of the original Constitution. The story goes back then that the Constitution was written. It was very painstaking. It took a long time. And then there were, it had to be ratified. And especially the southern states were like, no way, I'm not going to ratify that. All the way up to Virginia. And that was Thomas Jefferson's land. He's from Virginia. And he had a big argument because, to them, it was government overreach. They didn't want the federal government, which we were just forming at that time. We had just, demanded our independence and had a revolutionary war against the British. And we won. So now we're a country. And we decided that we are going to have a federal government, a government that covers the whole country instead of each individual state. Now, the southern states were still very much, they didn't really, they didn't like that a whole lot. They were afraid of things, and a lot of it, even back then, had to do with slavery. And the economies were different in the North and South, and the South really could not survive very well without slavery. That it would be hard for them, or at least it would be hard for the rich guys, because they would have to actually run their own farms and hire workers and, things like that. Slavery made their jobs a lot easier to produce tons of cotton and export it and all of that kind of thing. So they were, really worried about the federal government taking over. One of the things they were worried about was the fact that slavery, it did not exist in the North, and they thought that they might have trouble. They might have to fight against it. They thought that maybe the federal government would try and get rid of slavery, and that, they didn't want that to happen. So it's extremely complex, but a lot of the southern states would not ratify the Constitution, and that's a big reason why they demanded these amendments. And one very interesting thing, I did a bunch of research on this about 7 years ago and found out something that I had never known, never heard before in my life. So the Bill of Rights is the first 10 amendments to the Constitution. It's actually, that's not true. The proposed amendments, the Bill of Rights is actually the 3rd through the 12th. Proposed amendments. The First and Second Amendment, they were put up, but they were not ratified. One of them only got ratified in 1992, and the other one still is not ratified to this day. And I'd have to look them up to remember what they were exactly. But I just thought that was really interesting that the first 10 amendments, which is the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution are actually the 3rd through the 12th. First proposed amendments. Now, if you want to really be a purist, and only go by the Constitution the way it was originally written, well, then the Second Amendment should not be something that you're sticking up for, because that's an afterthought. That was added by the Southern states kind of as a demand. They also, you know, the Fourth Amendment, you know, seizure and search and seizure. There's also soldiers taking quarters in your house. I think that's part of the Fourth Amendment, that, you know, we didn't want that to happen. So a lot of it, even those amendments, were written because there was the British were basically, you know, all around. We kind of kicked them out, but they had been around, especially in Boston, obviously, for a couple decades, and we didn't want that to happen again. So that's part of the Fourth Amendment. That was more agreed on by everybody, but it wasn't included in the original Constitution. So if you really want to make that argument, you're going to have to be careful, because if you really draw the line the way that Republicans say they want to draw the line, well, then you have a good argument against the Second Amendment. And by the way, the Second Amendment does not, in any part of the language, does not guarantee an individual's right to have a gun. It says to bear arms. And it's basically, and of course, the first line is a well-regulated militia. Now, the reason they did that is because it was less about individual rights and it was more about states' rights. And the Southern states wanted to be able to still maintain their own state militias, because they thought maybe they would at some point go against the federal government. And that's where that kind of comes from. That's why you hear gun nuts saying, you know, need my gun to fight against the government. Well, you have your state militia to fight against the government if you really need to do that. And of course, good luck now, because you know, I don't think that the Minnesota or any state militia would do very well against the United States Air Force, for instance. But, you know, I guess gun nuts think that they'll have a chance even without their militia, just by themselves in their house, fighting against the United States Air Force. But you know, I'm not a gun nut, so I'm not in their heads, but the way they describe things, that's how I interpret what they think. So I just thought it was interesting hearing all of this, you know, trying to grill the Ketanji Brown Jackson on whether or not she thinks that we have a living constitution, which means things can change with it. It can be adjusted for modern day things. Now, of course, that's part of the reason they want it to be, you know, the originalist type of outlook, is because they want to get rid of Roe v. Wade, which is also an amendment to the Constitution. So, and they talk a lot about fundamental rights. They think that you got to be careful on, and I don't disagree with that. You got to be careful on how you define fundamental rights. If you're adding a new fundamental right, and that's usually what the conservatives fight against. They fought against that during civil rights, because they thought, well, everybody, you know, the original founding fathers already wrote that everybody's got equal rights in this country. Well, of course, in the 1960s, it was quite obvious that just in reality was not true. But that was their argument, and even women's rights, the ERA, they say, well, women already have that right. Okay, well, you know, then why are they getting paid, you know, 75 cents on the dollar compared to men? You know, so in reality, they don't have equal rights, and so that's a constant argument between conservatives and whatever you want to call us now, progressives. I think that's the best name, because it means moving forward. So, however, it did have, we're not going to talk about this because now I've already been talking long enough as a history geek, and probably starting to get boring, and we should probably be taking a break soon. But the term progressive had a slightly different meaning than it does now at the beginning of the 20th century as well. And it's very complex, but extremely interesting when you try and draw a line as to, for instance, why the Republicans basically were the, you know, if you want to call them liberals or progressives back, you know, Abraham Lincoln was called a liberal, and the conservatives were the Democrats down south who wanted to keep their slaves. When you try and analyze as to why that's turned completely upside down now, or even for the last 50 or so years, which is relatively not that long ago. For many years, it was even more complicated to delineate conservatives and progressives being assigned to a certain party, because there was kind of crossover going on. In the 1960s, more Republicans voted for some of the civil rights bills than Democrats did, because there were still a lot of Southern Democrats who were extremely conservative, and Nixon had a lot to do with turning them into Republicans, because he recognized why are all these conservatives down south still voting for Democrats? They should vote for Republicans. So he was a big part of turning that around. It's very interesting stuff, at least to me. I don't know. Patrick's fallen asleep, and we have to take a break. I have to like throw something at the window to wake him up because he's got to push some buttons. So sorry, Patrick. I put you to sleep there. But tell you what, let's take a break, and we'll think of something else to talk about when we come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for the Matt McNeil Show today. And we have, as a special guest, Casey Kasem is here to do part of his countdown. Take it away, Casey.
Hi, this is Casey Kasem, and today we're counting down the stupidest things Republicans have done this week. Our next artist claimed in 2016 that if Donald Trump became the nominee for president, the party would be dead, and they would deserve it. But now, he's become the biggest suck-up that Trump has ever had. So, just moved to number 4 in our charts, our next artist, Lindsey Graham, with his latest, To Circus or Not to Circus.
It won't be a circus. We're off to a good start.
Look at the friggin' Afghan government. It's made up of former detainees at Gitmo. This whole thing by the left about this war ain't working.
And then he gets you up and leaves. Anyway, that was Lindsey Graham today throwing a tissy fit at the hearings. I don't know what the war in Afghanistan, the far left doing something with the war in Afghanistan, really has to do with trying to find out more information about the new Supreme Court justice nominees. Background, but that's what Lindsey did. Yeah, yesterday he said, you know, basically he had threw a big fit about how, we're not going to have a circus today because, like we did when Democrats were in charge, like we're not going to do to you, Miss Brown Jackson, we're not going to do to you what many of my colleagues did to Brett Kavanaugh. When they had the hearing, we didn't interrupt the beginning of the proceeding. We didn't do all the nasty things that the Democrats did. That's what he talked about he had 10 minutes. Everybody had 10 minutes to kind of do their introductory thing yesterday. And he talked about that, and then he was going on about how Biden – well, then today he talked about that Biden was against a Bush nominee. What do you think about that? You know, and then Ketanji Brown Jackson just kind of like, I don't know what you're talking about, sir. he wasn't really asking her questions. He was just making all of these proclamations about how bad the Democrats are and how nice the Republicans are. But then, of course, you know, he got in a big yelling match with Dick Durbin, who's the chair of the committee. And I just kind of played you that part where he got all mad and said something about the war in Afghanistan and then stood up and left. in a big overdramatic BS session. So that's what's going on with Republicans in the hearings. They're also talking about court packing. What else were they talking about? Trying to force Judge Breyer out. I think that was Lindsey Graham saying that the Democrats, you know, were scheming to push out Judge Breyer so that he would step aside, so that President Biden could nominate a new Supreme Court justice, which of course he has, and they just can't stand it because it's both a woman and a black person, and they can't figure out which is worse. And but also not just a black person and not just a woman, but also a Democrat, and that might be what I can't tell which they're more scared of. But this is the most capable, looking up, there's a chart here, the most qualified of any, she will be the most qualified of any of the current nine, including Breyer, by the way, who she clerked for, and it would be Breyer that she would be taking the place of. So there's a chart. So public high school, I'm just going to use their last names because, you know, but so I'll refer to her as Jackson. Went to public high school, Jackson, Breyer, Alito, and Kagan. Everyone else apparently went to private schools. Then an Ivy League law school, everybody except Amy Cohen Barrett. So that would be Jackson, Thomas, Breyer, Roberts, Alito, Sotomayor, Kagan, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh all went to an Ivy League law school. Amy Cohen Barrett did not. Supreme Court clerking, Jackson did. Thomas did not. Breyer did. Roberts did. Alito did not. Sotomayor did not. Kagan, Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett all did. Public defender, Jackson is the only one who's been a public defender. Sentencing commission, only Jackson and Breyer have been on a sentencing commission. A district judge, only Sotomayor and Jackson were ever a district judge. Court of Appeals judge, all of them except Kagan, actually, was on the Court of Appeals judge. Ketanji Brown Jackson had every single one of those things, went to a public high school, went to an Ivy League law school, Supreme Court clerk, public defender, sentencing commission, district judge, and Court of Appeals judge. She did all of those things. For instance, Amy Cohen Barrett. She only was a Supreme Court clerk and a Court of Appeals judge. None of the other things does she have experience in. She's actually the least experienced judge in decades, at least. I mean, if we looked it up, it might be even longer. Might be ever. I don't know. The Republicans really can't, and I think they know that they can't argue against her capabilities and her qualifications. Because, by the way, Kavanaugh, the only additional thing he did that Amy Cohen Barrett did not is went to an Ivy League law school. So he only checks three of the boxes: Ivy League high school, Supreme Court clerk, and Court of Appeals judge are the only things he's done. And that's exactly the same with Gorsuch. So the last three judges that got put in by Republicans under Trump are basically the least qualified in the court. So they can't talk about that Ketanji Brown Jackson is not qualified or capable of doing it. They're, I'm sure, really worried about how they're going to vote because they will be voting, and it sounds like most of them are, Republicans going to be voting against the most qualified, most capable Supreme Court justice nominee possibly ever, certainly for the last few decades. So, that's very interesting. So what they're going after her on is Lindsey went after her faith. Now, it turns out that he was asking her what her faith was. Do you think that you could judge a Catholic? And Then he said, "Because now, does this make you feel uncomfortable, me asking you these questions? Creepy old man like me asking you these questions, making you say things that you don't necessarily need to be letting people know about your personal life?" You know, and she's kind of like, "Yeah, I really don't want to go there." And he's like, "Well, that's how she must have felt. That's how Amy Cohen Barrett must have felt when the Democrats did that to her." So that's, you know, he has nothing. He's got no points to say against Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, because so he's just trying to do all this other crap, trying to point out about how poorly the Democrats handled the last couple committee hearings on this matter. Kind of going through my notes, it talked about Alito being in some group, and that Democrats were saying, "Well, if you were in this group, you know, they basically said this and this." You know, nobody even remembers what poor Lindsey was even talking about. Some of the notes I have written here, it's like I don't know what he was talking about. So, but it was very interesting. I don't want to talk about it too much, but I could, I mean, just this alone could be talked about for the entire 2 hours of this this show today. So anyway, let's take a break and come back. You're listening to AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson in for Matt McNeil, and we'll be right back. Todd Mickelson with you back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Patrick, did you have a good weekend since the weather was good for 10 minutes?
I did. I was actually up north. I was working at a hockey tournament in Baudette, which is up on the... way up there, up on the Canadian border, about an hour west of International Falls. So, It was an interesting weekend, to say the least. Very nice weather for March up on the border.
Yeah, I didn't know you were that into hockey.
Yeah, that's kind of something I do in my time outside of the radio station. So,
oh, cool. Yeah.
So that was something that I had volunteered for a few weeks ago, because this was one of the this was the Bantam Double A. So these kids are about 14 or 15 years old, and so it was kind of it kind of worked out well, because I wanted to make a weekend out of it and go to a site far from the Twin Cities. And the guy I work for hockey said, "Yeah, I'd like you to go up there, because I want one of my key people up on the Baudette site." Not to get too detailed, but there was a whole bunch of different sites going on of different kids and age level throughout Minnesota over the tournament weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. It was tournament weekend. Well, that's cool. That's a lot different than I thought. I thought you were just going to say, "Yeah, I sat out in my front yard for 10 minutes, you know, which is all basically what I did, trying to take it easy. Say, we have a caller that wants to talk more about judicial comments, Gary from Minneapolis. How you doing, Gary?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
So I just got a few thoughts here. These guys are nobody to complain about how we treat those Republican judges, because our judges don't even get a hearing. And then when they get in there, they destroy our democracy as much as they can. Corporations united, put all that money, billionaire money in it, even more than it is. The Voting Rights Act, that's not good enough for them either. And then I vote early, so they're trying to say my vote don't count.
Yeah, I know.
So
yeah.
And then the gerrymandering, that's fine with them. So I guess that's just a few things.
Oh, yeah. And we could go on with that kind of list forever. For one thing, part of the reason that the Democrats were hard on Brett Kavanaugh, not even talking about who paid off his house and his $250,000 loan and something else, setting that aside, and the fact that it looks like Kennedy was pushed out to make room for Kavanaugh by possibly blackmailing his son. Setting that aside, Kavanaugh was very, very credibly accused by a few women of sexual assault. And that's what the Democrats were kind of asking some questions about. They had plenty. They had plenty to go down the road on Kavanaugh. The problem with the Republicans are having with Ketanji Brown Jackson is that she's the most qualified candidate possibly ever, and she hasn't raped anybody, you know, so they don't know what to do. Anyway, so thanks for calling, Gary. Always good to hear from Gary. He's got some good things to add to pretty much anything. Oh, say, I don't know if you heard, there was a car show, and I just had it here in front of me, and then I went. There was a car show where 27 people were shot because a gunfight broke out. So you know why do we do things like, and it didn't even make the news. I mean, I don't know. Did you hear about this, Patrick?
I heard about it a little bit, actually, yes, but it was kind of a, we're just kind of used to this, so, you know, not a big deal.
Yeah, I mean, you have to dig to find the news about it. Authorities say one man was killed and 27 people were wounded when two people got into a gunfight during a car show that's part of an annual community event in a small southeast Arkansas town. So what, of course, the only solution to that is more guns! If there would have been more guns as opposed to no guns at this car show, no one would have been shot, right? Because more guns make sure people don't get shot. And we all know car shows are dangerous and that you're probably going to get shot. So you have to bring your gun. Sadly, that's America right now.
I mean, when this happens in Texas or Arkansas, it gets kind of like, what do you mean there are no guns around?
Yeah, and you know, like sometimes I remember saying, you know, this is like watching Deadwood or something, you know, an Old West movie. But actually, in the Old West, in Deadwood, the sheriff took your gun from you when you came into town. Maybe not Deadwood in the 1870s, but probably by the 1880s. I mean, like, for instance, the whole reason that the shootout at OK Corral happened in Tombstone was because the guys weren't supposed to have guns, because the sheriff takes your gun when you enter the town. So even Tombstone was more safe than a modern-day car show in Arkansas. Tombstone in the 1870s is safer than a car show in Arkansas in 2022. Because there are more guns at the car show than there were in Tombstone in the 1870s. Okay. My blood pressure's high now. My friend Erin Murphy is making some points, and basically she's making some points about the fact that, let's talk about some Minnesota, bring it home a little bit here. We only have one more break to go to, right, Patrick?
That's right.
Yeah, okay. I'm sorry. I don't do this enough. I'm out of practice, as per usual. She makes the point. Here, I'll read something that she wrote. Yesterday, the Senate GOP held a press conference announcing their proposal for paid family leave. That might sound exciting. It's a policy that has had little progress in the legislature, but great potential to benefit so many Minnesotans forced to choose between getting a paycheck or caring for their loved ones. Except it wasn't. Rather than guarantee paid leave options for individuals and families across the state, it was a bundle of tax credits for business owners to distribute among workers. Like so many of the Republican proposals that have passed the Senate floor, it was a nothing burger. 2 months into the regular session, and the Senate has little to show for it. The Senate majority has set an agenda that offers thin proposals for the urgent issues facing our communities. She has a list here, but I would like to talk about that paid family and medical leave. It ended up leading me to a story that revealed something I did not know. That's pretty maddening. So I've been working on paid family and medical leave as a small business owner down at the Capitol for years. Six and a half years. This has been going back and forth. It gets passed in the House when the DFL has the House, and then it won't pass the Senate because the GOP's in the Senate. Then the House takes over the Senate, passes it, and the GOP House won't pass it. And but the GOP knows that the vast majority of Minnesotans want this. And the vast majority of small business owners want this. You know, like me, for my very small business, it would help me a lot. I told the story 100 times, but I had an employee who needed a hip replacement, and we paid him for the 3.5 months he was gone, convalescing. And if there would have been paid family and medical leave, well, some of that would have got kicked in by the state. You know, it would have cost me less. So, and there's a very comprehensive plan on how to pay for it. I mean, this has been being worked on for years and years. And the Republicans keep putting up really sad, stupid, sorry bills to try and compensate for it. Like and that's what Aaron Murphy's talking about here. They basically give a tax credit for businesses that do offer paid family and medical leave. Now, of course, most of those businesses are huge because they're the only ones who can afford to do it. And so it's just more tax relief for large corporations. But the Republicans try and pass it off as, oh, no, we're trying to do this. You know, if we are giving companies an incentive to offer paid family and medical leave. Yeah, well, that's just basically they're making a deal with the large corporations who already offer it so that they can get more tax cuts. Another thing that the Republicans are trying to keep up is the reinsurance. I don't know how many people know exactly what this is, but it's because of skyrocketing health care. So what they do is they pay health insurance companies when the companies have to pay a large bill. They recompensate the health insurance companies. And they say then, well, the health insurance companies will have lower costs for their customers, which of course they don't. So this is just more tax breaks for large insurance companies. And here's the thing that, so here, I'll give you some more detail. At the Minnesota legislature, that something is officially called it's premium security plan, but really it's known as the reinsurance plan. It's used by the state to stabilize the individual and small group health insurance market, which is used by about 170,000 residents. In short, the state puts money into a fund to help insurance companies cover especially high medical bills, a move that has been credited sometimes begrudgingly with decreasing premiums while increasing plan availability. It has not resulted in that. But because it reflects two very different responses to how to serve relatively small niche of a health insurance market, it has also become the matter of pointed disagreement between Republicans and DFLers in the legislature, subject to last-minute deal-making that's often been linked to other usually unrelated issues. In 2021, for example, a one-year extension of the program was included in a final agreement between Governor Tim Walz and legislative leaders that also included a plan to distribute $250 million in bonuses to frontline workers. But while the bonuses have yet to be paid, the reinsurance program is fully funded, partly with money the state received under the Federal American Rescue Plan. So they're taking money that was supposed to go to frontline workers, and they're doing it, putting it through the reinsurance plan. So it was supposed to be a temporary, by the way, in 2017, and it's $200 million or more a year. I mean, we just had a pandemic and we had $250 million. We were going to do basically a one-time payment to frontline workers and you know, distribute it among all the frontline workers. So basically everybody gets a very small piece of the pie. But this reinsurance plan, it's more than $200 million every year getting put into the pockets of insurance companies. That's what you get when you vote for the GOP in Minnesota. I don't know. We can talk about this more maybe but that's the gist of it. But there's a little bit kind of more confounding things that go along with this. But, you know, of course, the Republicans are holding up that payment of that $250 million that's supposed to be workers. It's been being held up for months now. because they keep making demands on walls and the DFLers. So basically nothing's getting done in the Senate because the Senate refuses to do anything. They just hold everything hostage. And so thanks, Aaron Murphy, for pointing that out to me. I had no idea that the reinsurance program was still going on and getting funded better than the rescue plan was. Very maddening. We'll take one more break before the end of the hour. You're listening to AM 950, and we'll try and do something. I don't know. We'll try and bring the blood pressure down when we come back. I'll try and think of something better to talk about. I don't know. I don't know if I can. I can't make promises. But anyway, we'll be back in a few minutes. Todd Mickelson in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota, trying to find something less maddening. Here's a very interesting story. The electricity grids of Ukraine and Moldova have been successfully synchronized with the continental European grid. This will help Ukraine to keep their electricity system stable and their lights on. It's a historic milestone for our relationship, that relationship is with Europe. Basically, this person is saying Ukraine is now part of Europe as far as their electric grid. Now, I know some places have been knocked out, but it sounds like some places were able to stay on longer because of this. And more news about the other side of the world. Well, first of all, one thing that has happened is the world is more united now than they have been for a long time, and it's all against, basically, Vladimir Putin. It seems like even Russia is turning against Vladimir Putin. Of course, it's very similar there than it is here, where there's still just a very, you know, a small percentage are pro-Putin, but they're very pro-Putin, crazy pro-Putin, just like here, the pro-Trump people. But the GDP level in Russia has basically been erased, going back to the level it was in about 2005. So they've been trying to grow the GDP and had some stabilization happen then. And it grew, it looks like it was at about 77, and it went up to about 90. Just right before the war started, and then the moment the war started, it went back down to about 77 or 6. So that's not good for Putin at all, and it is good for uniting the world against him, and it's also good for making him go away. What if Russia all became more stable? What if they weren't a complete dictatorship? Now, just because Putin falls doesn't mean they're going to not no longer be a dictatorship, but it's at least a something good to get rid of him. So there's a couple decent things in these times that are so hard to be going through right now, but I still feel optimistic. So we'll talk more when we come back and do the second hour. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Patrick, I'm not liking how you're handling the weather forecast. You're not doing a good job as far as it. The commercials you're reading are sounding good, but your weather forecast sucks.
Oh, I agree it sucks too, but I'm just delivering the facts. I'm sorry.
Well, all right. And I was going to ask you, can you say zero res backwards?
Zero res, backward or forward, spells the same.
But is it pronounced the same too? Zero res. We have to play it back. Do you have the technology to play it backwards?
I do.
Zero res.
I do actually. I think if I mess around in our Adobe Audition, I'm sure I could find out if it sounds the same.
Yeah, that would be interesting. Get on that. Maybe give the weather forecast to someone else, and then you work on a recording of Zero Res Backwards. I think that would be good for our audience. I think that's what they're looking for.
That's the content they're here for.
Yeah. So let's stick with a little bit of good news. I'm actually feeling really good these days. I know there's a lot of horrible things going on in the world, and there's a lot of very frustrating things going on in politics. Although, you know, we got a taste of the nice, this is always hard this time of year in Minnesota because you get a taste of the nice weather. Sunday, I almost got my motorcycle out, and then you know, today happens, and it feels like we're, you know, back in kind of winterish again, and so it's hard to get teased and go back and forth at this time of year. And it was kind of funny because my wife Heidi and I were sitting outside in the warm the other day, and she goes, "Man, can you believe just a couple days ago there was like 2 feet of snow here?" And it's like, well, yeah, that happens every year. But I do the same thing. I can't like make fun of her because I do the same thing. And it's like, you know, man, all of a sudden there's tons of leaves. Like 3 days ago, there were no leaves. And now there's a ton. Now the everything's gone green. I can't believe it. Well, it happens every year. So why can't we believe it? I don't know. It's weird living in Minnesota.
Yeah, no one ever comments, though, that, oh, great, the yard stinks because all those rotting leaves are now visible.
Yeah. No, we just ignore that because the weather's getting nice. And it's like, it stinks, but, you know, that's okay. More good news is on the COVID-19 front. Now, I know a lot of people are talking about this new variant that's spiking a little bit in other countries, spiking a lot in China. But China, there are tons of factors involved in all of this. First of all, China's vaccines are not as good quality as ours, and they're not as vaccinated because there's trillions of people who live in China, so it's really hard to get everybody vaccinated. So they got hit harder with it. In England, it kind of went up a little bit and went down. They think that maybe could be starting to happen on the East Coast here a little bit, but it's not making a dent in hospitalizations for you know, and things like that. It's not it seems like it's way less potent, even if it's as or more contagious. People are, you know, they get sick for a day or two and then they get better and don't have to go to the hospital. The numbers in Minnesota are great right now. Sadly, there was 12 deaths, but there, you know, 6 or 8 weeks ago, we were up in the 30s, I think, with deaths every day. Now we're back down. Any death is horrible, but 12 is better than 38. Our percentage, the number I think is very important as far as what's going on, is their percentage of people taking tests who test positive. And right now we're down to 2.8%. We were as high as 23.7% in January. Now we're down to 2.8%, and it keeps going down. Every day I look at it and it goes down just a little bit more. I think 3 days ago it was at 3%. So those are really good numbers. I remember back at the beginning of the pandemic, they said if we're above 5, we should take precautions and mask up and stuff like that. If we're above 10, we better just shut everything down. So, you know, we were up in the, like, well, I just said 23.7 in January. Now we're down to 2.8. As far as hospitalizations go, what am I looking? Yeah, okay. Through March 21st, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 250, down from 279 the day before. And 219 are in non-ICU care, and that's down from 237. That's good. In intensive care, there are 31 people in intensive care. That's down from 42. So all of those numbers are getting better, and of course the weather is going to get better. Minnesota is 69.9% vaccinated. As far as at least one shot, 66.1% completely vaccinated with all shots and boosted and everything. So that helps a lot. Also, a lot of people got, including me, I got in January, the Omicron hit our house, and it was kind of one night of having a really, really bad cold and feeling kind of feverish, and that was about it, really. And but apparently that brings up your immunity quite a bit as well, if you've been vaccinated. If you haven't been vaccinated, well, you're basically naked on a cold day. So, you know, you could very easily get sick and get pretty sick. So please get vaccinated. So anyway, so that whole world is looking better. And also, so in my small business, we've really been feeling the supply chain problem, but we've been feeling it for nearly 2 years. It's not Joe Biden's issue. It was kind of more of a mixture of things, including and especially a worldwide pandemic. A lot less people working in factories, less exchange of materials. I mean, it was a worldwide pandemic. So, yeah, we had supply chain problems. And, yeah, nobody was burning gas because nobody was allowed to go outside and drive a car. And so, but now the oil company, well, the price of oil went way up, but the price of oil is down now. So that's getting better. And so is the supply chain issues. The products that I had designed are made out of aluminum and have some brass parts. We never had problem with the brass parts. We had trouble with the aluminum. So we were falling behind because our manufacturer who makes the parts that I designed was having trouble getting the proper aluminum to make those parts. And they were having trouble for more than a year now. And some other very reliable vendors that I buy things like measurement meters, air measurement meters, for the wind maker that I designed, having trouble getting those. And that's a very reliable and old company that I could normally order as many of these instruments as I needed, and they would arrive in about a week or maybe a little more in the week. And I'm talking about starting in 2004 when I was, became one of this company's best customers. And now something I ordered about 2 weeks ago is due, they're saying, in June. So it's really wild if you're trying to run a business like mine where we rely on getting parts to get our stuff out the door. Luckily, our customers are being quite understanding. But when you talk about gas prices, it was worse during the Arab Spring. Basically, when the Arab Spring happened in about 2012 and 13, in Egypt, where the dictatorship was overthrown, and it was called Arab Spring. Well, a lot of oil in the Middle East. Prices went up higher than they are now. The price of gas per gallon was higher. Minnesotans paid about $3.94 per gallon at the pump last week, roughly $1.20 more than the winter of 2019 before the pandemic. But it's the third highest price on record, behind the record of $4.29 in May of 2013. And also then in July of 2008, the prices were $3.96, slightly higher than they are now. What happened in 2008? That was the Bush recession. George W. Bush, the last Republican president we had before Trump, led us into a huge recession just this side of a depression. And gas prices were higher than they are now. And that is, that's taking in is that talking about inflation? When you take inflation into account, Minnesotans experienced a lot more pain at the pump last decade than so far this year. From 2011 to 2014, gas prices were higher than $3.94. back then. And if we go back further, the 1979 crisis. So here's another paragraph from this. I'm reading from the Minnesota Reformer, one of our great sources for news that we rely on here on AM 950. They report things that nobody else does. So I'm reading from a report that they have posted that's really interesting and has charts and all kinds of stuff you can look up. Here's another paragraph. So far this year, national gas prices have averaged about $3.56 per gallon. The average annual price in 1974 was $2.92, adjusted for inflation in 2021 dollars. Prices rose much higher around the oil crisis of 1979 and again in 2008. So in 1979, it went up to $3.92 in today's dollars, whereas right now it is at $3.94. So about the same. Back in 2008, in today's dollars, it went up to $5.14. So, and another thing I would like to point out when inflation, the last time inflation was this bad, it was about a year and a half into the administration of Ronald Reagan. And that was basically because we were recovering from the 1979 oil crisis. And it kind of really hit hard the whole economy. So he was trying to clean that up. And then what happened at the beginning of Barack Obama's presidency? Well, he had to clean up after George W. Bush, who put us into a massive recession. And what's happening now? President Biden has to clean up after the only 4 years was able to ruin the country, Donald Trump. By the way, he rose our deficit almost $8 trillion, where Biden has brought it down. I think he's brought it down something like $3 trillion in less than 2 years. But yeah, it's the Republicans who are the fiscally responsible party. Right. Let's take a break and come back and talk about something else. You're listening to AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Does that remind you of a dancing a prairie dog? I don't know if you know what the reference is from Caddyshack.
Or the gopher?
Gopher, yeah. Yeah. The gopher? Anyway, Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil on AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And now let's go to Casey Kasem's countdown of the stupidest things Republicans have done this week. Our next artist is a duo. One of the two has not graduated high school and sat in jail and married a guy who shows his genitals to young girls. The other one is just somebody who doesn't seem to know how to spell things or what things are called. Last week, she thought the president was called the Commander and Chief, instead of, as we know, Commander-in-Chief. Our next artist, recent hit. Sorry, I'm ad-libbing. Recently, the House voted to renew the National Marrow Donor Program, a program that matches bone marrow donors with leukemia patients. The House vote was 415-2. The two who voted against it, of course, Lauren Boebert, and what's her name? Marjorie Taylor Greene. I don't know why. I don't know why they want to take away that program. Or maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't understand what it was. I can't think of what they might have thought. National Marrow. Do they? Let's see. Maybe tomorrow? No. Maybe they thought, oh, we should do that today, and they thought Maro meant tomorrow. I don't know. I can't figure out. Can't figure out the dumb. It's hard to figure out the dumb sometimes. There's a new Minnesota Police Department contract that's some of the details have been coming out, and there's just a few days left apparently where they have to sign it in, you know, and make it come to fruition. And it's really pointing out that the main problem here is not originally the actual policeman. It seems to be the what is it called? The Federation. I can't remember. It's the police union. Anyway, Bob Krull was the leader of it for a long time. I remember giving him a call when I was running for office, and he basically hung up on me because he found out I was a Democrat. That kind of thing. And so what it's called is the Police Officers Federation of Minneapolis. And it's basically the Minneapolis Police Department's union. Now, it can be very reasonably argued that police should not have a union, very similar to the way that our military doesn't have a union. You're not really an employee of a company trying to get more rights for fairness from your company. You're actually a public servant. You know, what if you go on strike? Can the police go on strike? Can the union, demand that, no, if you don't sign everybody, you know, to get this benefit, we're going to go on strike and the police just go off duty? Is that something that should be allowed to happen? So it could be very reasonably argued that the police should not have a union. And it seems like Bob Krull is, it really looks like he was kind of solely responsible for doing a lot of the making it into the military. Militarizing is the word I'm looking for. Wow. Militarizing the police. And for instance, under his watch is when they started doing the warrior training. So, of course, quite often you have guys who are in the military sign up to go into law enforcement. You know, they kind of feel like that's what they're kind of going down the road of already. But when you're in the military, you're trained to kill people. You're not trained to protect people. You're trained to kill people. Now, there's more to it than that, obviously. I'm oversimplifying. But you would think that, you know, you get in the military, you learn how to use firearms, you learn tactics that might come in handy in law enforcement and things like that. So, yeah, you're a great candidate to go into law enforcement. But then we don't want to put you through warrior training in order to put on the police uniform and go out and serve and protect the community, do we? I don't think so. But that seems to be what has been going on. That kind of, you know, seems to be behind a lot of the incidents that have been going on, especially in Minneapolis. I know if you listen to Matt McNeil's show regularly, you've heard a lot of these stories. And there are unbelievably a lot of them, and they are unbelievably harsh. I mean, some of them sound unbelievable. And then on top of that, you have the police department not telling the truth about it. For instance, when George Floyd was murdered, they said, a prisoner died in custody of a health complication. That was their first report before, you know, video came out that people were filming, actual witnesses were filming on their phones. So they can't really do that anymore, although they still try and do that all the time. So in this new contract, there's a lot of people saying, you know, it does not hold police more accountable. What is in the contract? The contract with the Police Federation, which typically runs about 130 pages, covers a wide variety of topics ranging from officers' pay rates to their work schedules and rights in discipline proceedings. Rights in discipline proceedings is one of the big main problems that we're having here. So the latest tentative agreement includes raises for officers and $7,000 incentive payments if they remain on duty through the end of the year. By year's end, an officer who has graduated from the academy would be set to make about $74,000. That all sounds perfectly fine. More if they work certain shifts and things like that. That all sounds great. The deal makes two changes to the discipline section. One revision aims to clarify what happens to police supervisors who are demoted and then rejoin the union ranks. Another emails officers when someone requests public records about them and tells them who made the request. Those two things both sound problematic to me. Another change elsewhere in the document aims to give the police chief wider latitude to decide where officers should be assigned when they return from a critical incident. That's one where they might have been harmed or they might have harmed or killed someone else. I'm not an expert, so I don't feel qualified to really make a judgment on that. That doesn't sound bad to me. But the other two things, you know, basically if somebody has, you know, requests some public records about them, they get to know who requested it and get to know that it happened. I mean, that sounds like it could be a whistleblower maybe trying to get information. And so, I don't know. That doesn't sound good to me. And if you're demoted and then you go into the union ranks. So if you're an officer, it sounds like if you're a supervisor, you're not under the union. If you get demoted, well, why'd you get demoted? Being demoted usually means something bad. Now you get the union behind you. So what's not in the contract? Critics see the latest agreement as a sign that Mayor Fry has failed to follow up on his public statements that officers should be both paid more and fired more. Dave Bicking, who is with an organization called Communities United Against Police Brutality, his statement basically is, we got the raises, we did not get the accountability. So not only do we have the union kind of stiff-arming everything and things like that, it also sounds like Mayor Jacob Fry is not up to standing up against them. For instance, recently there was the whole thing about the knocking on the door, you know. I can't remember where here we go. The knocking on the door. Jacob Fry on Monday proposed a policy change that would permanently ban the police department's use of no-knock warrants. Instead, officers must knock, announce, and wait. And though not yet written, the policy would prohibit Minneapolis police from both applying for and executing no-knock warrants. Now, the problem with this is that basically Mayor Fry ran during the last campaign. When he ran, he said that was already in place. He said he already got rid of no-knock warrants. He said they were not allowed and that was his doing. And that's what he ran on. Then, of course, there was that horrible incident that happened where there was a door knock and somebody was killed. It was a no-knock body camera. It was a lock. It was the guy who died. I'm sorry. I'm doing a bad job of reading through this article. No representative from the police department was present for Fry's announcement that he made after that. Where, if you remember, he had a press conference after that shooting, and where police went into apartment building. And did a no-knock. They just, you know, basically knocked the door down and came in. They quietly unlocked the door, like with a skeleton key kind of thing. And they shot a young man, and he died. And the press conference that happened after that, Mayor Fry was asked, why did they have a no-knock permit? And he said, I don't know. So there's a problem going on here that really needs to change. And I don't know who needs to take charge. I mean, but this is a mess. It's a mess. And it really needs to get cleaned up. Basically, you know, if you talk about not wanting to go into Minneapolis, I'm not afraid of the criminals so much as I'm afraid of the cops right now. You know, I'm not afraid to go into Minneapolis. Minneapolis is great. I love going into Minneapolis, go out to dinner or something once in a while, go to a show, and I'm not scared. It's not a scary place. But, you know, the cops make me a little nervous. And I'm an old white guy. And, you know, but that's how bad the news about the Minneapolis Police Department has been. And that's not good. You know, I want to trust the cops. I don't want to be afraid of the cops. Nobody does. You know, there are a lot of proposals on how to fix the cops. But right now, this new contract is not seeming to do anything. It seems like nothing is happening. It seems like nothing is changing. And it really needs to. So we just have to really, really hope and hope that this next year starts to go better. And I hope that training does get better. Another thing that Aaron Murphy pointed out that the Republicans proposed for solutions in public safety. They proposed $1 million billboards for jobs in law enforcement. So, yeah, I don't know. That's meager at most. Anyway, let's take a break and come back. And I don't even know what we're going to talk about next. There's so many weird things going on these days. But I'm Todd Mickelson, sitting in for Matt McNeil, trying to think of stuff to talk about. If you have an idea, give us a call at 952-946-6205. We'll be right back. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota, Todd Mickelson in for Matt McNeil. Big happy birthday goes out to Dolores Mickelson, who turns 80 today. Happy birthday to Dolores. That's my mom. I'm leaving here to go straight to a restaurant to meet up with her and my brothers and my nephews to celebrate my mom's 80th birthday.
Well, happy birthday to your mom.
Yeah. I'll tell her you said, well, she's said she's, you know, the only one who promises to listen when I'm on. So hopefully she heard that. She's maybe getting in the car with one of my brothers to go to the restaurant. I hope she didn't miss it. I bet I said it right when she, like the seconds that she was changing from listening in her house to going out to my brother's car, where of course they'll both listen. I don't know. My brother might not allow that. I can't tell if my brother hates me or doesn't hate me. You have a problem like that with? See, I hope he's not listening. Maybe he'll tell me later tonight. I'm going to see him. I like him just fine. And no, I don't think he hates me. Say, my wife is on the school board, and it was a little crazy a few months ago with parents coming and yelling about CRT and all of this crap that's just not even existent. And they were saying things like, my daughter is permanently ruined because she wore a mask. Not thinking, of course, that maybe your daughter was saved from being permanently ruined by getting COVID-19. But it was pretty crazy a few months ago. It's tamped down now. But it turns out that all these people, the vast majority, well, and we even knew that in our district that some of the people were not in the district. There were people who were writing about it online, and they were specifically targeting my district that our daughter went to school in and that my wife is on the school board, which is Mound West Tonka School. And by the way, the girls just won hockey, basketball? I should pay some attention to sports if I'm going to bring it up. But I know that West Tonka just won something by like 1 point in the final seconds of the game. I think it was basketball. So congratulations to the Mound West Tonka girls basketball team. Anyway, I really hope I got that right. Otherwise, my brother will hate me. So, but it turns out that most of the people, not only are they maybe not in that public school district, but they don't have kids going to any school anywhere. It turns out that there are a Gallup poll actually has been keeping track since 1999 of the percentage of parents that are happy with their kids' public schools. So I'm reading from an article by Jessica Gross. She's an opinion writer for New York Times, but she's basically reacting to some of this data. So it's not just her opinion. Let's see here. Point out that about 9 in 10 children in the United States attend public school. And the overwhelming majority of parents, about 8 in 10, are happy with their kids' schools. So this person writes, though I am quite happy with my children's public school, me too, Mount Westonka is great. I'm also surrounded by parents who are mostly happy with their kids' public schools. And when I was a kid, attended a public school that my parents were basically happy with, I was still surprised that the number was this high. 80% basically is how high it is. Parents think that public schools are great. I would have thought the latest numbers about parental satisfaction might be lower because of all the pandemic-related chaos. But according to this Gallup poll, which has tracked school satisfaction annually since 1999, in 2021, after the pandemic, after all this chaos, in 2021, 73% of parents of school-aged children say they are satisfied with the quality of education their oldest child is receiving. More parents were satisfied in 2021 than they were in 2013 and 2002, when satisfaction dipped into the 60s. And in 2019, we were at a high point of 82%. Of course, that was right before the pandemic. Digging deeper into the Gallup numbers revealed that the people who seem to be driving the negative feelings toward American schools do not have children attending them. Overall, only 46% of Americans are satisfied with schools. Democrats, women, older adults, and lower-income Americans more likely than their counterparts to say they are satisfied. So basically, it's the old people that don't have kids in schools that are chiming in more, bringing this number down. So it's quite maddening. I mean, it's just more of these people not knowing what they're talking about. If you ask them what CRT is, they're like, I don't know, but it's going to stop. So it's, and even in the hearings today, talking about, you know, to trying to approve of a new nominee for the Supreme Court, they're talking about what she thinks about CRT. Is she behind CRT? Did she invent CRT? Does she think CRT should be taught in schools? She's going to be a judge on the Supreme Court. So why are you talking about CRT, which, by the way, you don't know what it is. Nobody knows what it is. It's a vague sort of theory. You know, it's a legal theory that's really only mentioned in like law school. And a lot of people went to law school after law school said, I've never heard of CRT. So it's... Anyway, so I'm being distracted because there's people talking out in the hallway. Do they know we're on the air? Got to turn the light on out. So we need to get another light out there.
I should go out and yell at them.
Yeah, and then we could hear that. We should put that on the air. That would be fun. So here's another very interesting thing. So I don't know if you remember, Patrick, when Barack Obama became president. Our intelligence basically said that the thing they're most worried about in our national security is the rise in like white supremacists and stuff like that. Now that's the bummer about having the first African American president is it seems to have really riled the white supremacists. And then, of course, a few years later, you get Donald Trump saying, hey, all you white supremacists, don't be so ashamed. Why are you hiding under a rock?
Come on, come on out. Let's go. Let's go up Pennsylvania Avenue. Oh, I love Pennsylvania Avenue. Let's go up Pennsylvania Avenue to the Capitol.
You know how he, when he says Pennsylvania Avenue and then he says, oh, I love Pennsylvania Avenue? That's because he was just told what Pennsylvania Avenue is. That's the sign that somebody said. He said,
hey, when I stand on this street, I can see the Capitol from here. I can see the...
Oh, that's Pennsylvania Avenue, sir.
Oh, wow.
Another sign is when he says,
many people don't know Pennsylvania Avenue. Many people don't know.
But anyway, here's a new report. Worries rise about co-opting of religion. Now, this goes back decades, really. I mean, to talk about it properly, I should have started this like 40 minutes ago. But there's new research linking Christian nationalism with a desire to limit voting. People citing their faith as the reason they support trucker convoys that shut down the border over COVID protections and the fact that Jesus name appeared all over the place during the January 6, 2021 Capitol insurrection. Yeah, what is that all about? It turns out that concern about rising radicalism among a segment of white American Christians led this week to what some religious extremism experts call the biggest Congress-related event on the topic in years. There was a last Thursday evening briefing called God is on our side, White Christian Nationalism and the Capitol Insurrection. This is an article from the Washington Post. This isn't a crazy thing. This is a real thing. Now, Barry Goldwater was the crazy guy back in 1964. He ran as a very extremist. He was basically the first guy running under what is known by geeks like me to be called. Now I can't remember the name, of course. The Movement Conservative, that's what it is. The Movement Conservative kind of began because a lot of conservatives were really mad at Eisenhower because they thought he was too liberal. He was very liberal. He started the highway system. He expanded federal spending on infrastructure and things like that. So they were really mad at him. So the Movement Conservative began, and then Barry Goldwater also was infiltrated unsuccessfully by Christian nationalists. They started having meetings with him, and he made a statement saying, these people are nuts. We cannot allow these Christian nationalists to take over the Republican Party, or we're doomed. That's what he was saying 50 years ago. Well, of course, we know that especially throughout the very late 70s, going into the 80s, and then getting even stronger during the 90s, partially because of George W. Bush being a frat boy drunk in the 70s, and then talking his dad and Ronald Reagan into listening to these Christian nationalists. Like, hey, you know, these guys really helped me out a lot, you know, because I was a drunk, and these Christians really helped me through that. You should talk to him, Daddy. You should get the president to talk to him too. So they did. I mean, it's a lot of people don't realize that.
Many people don't know
that both Reagan and George W. Bush Sr., George H. W. Bush, were supporters of Planned Parenthood back in the late 70s, going into the early 80s. And it was George W. Bush getting them to talk to the Christian nationalists that started this whole anti-abortion fervor that we're still absolutely crazed over on the Republican side. Anyway, so there's a new report talking about Christian nationalism. The report was released in February and was the project of the Baptist Joint Committee for Religious Liberty and the Freedom from Religion Foundation. It chronicles in exhaustive detail the art, signs, flags, jewelry, spoken words, and even a gallows that protesters brought January 6th that cited Christ and Christianity. It also talks about various nonprofit groups, lawmakers, and clergy who worked together to adorn January 6th and Donald Trump's effort to overturn his electoral loss with theological fervor. I mean, reading more of this article, it is absolutely crazy. But we do need to take a break. Let's take a break and come on back and finish out the final hour of today's Matt McNeil Show with Todd Mickelson when we come back on AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. AM 950, the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Todd Mickelson sitting in for Matt McNeil. Matt will be back tomorrow, and he will tell us why he wasn't here today. He's keeping it a mystery. So you're going to have to tune in tomorrow if you want to know the answer to that. Just to finish up a couple points about what I was talking about before we went to the break, some kind of disturbing things. The insurrectionists were given moral license for the attack, and since then, a growing slice of Americans are justifying it. This is Christian nationalism is a big part of it. A lot of Americans look at that day and think a lot of crazy people acted out, but it was far more organized, and it wasn't just the Trump political organization, this guy is saying. What tied many unconnected people and groups together was a shared worldview that Christianity should be fused with civic life and that true Americans are white, culturally conservative, and natural-born citizens. Sounds a little bit like Nazi Germany to me, but we're not allowed to point that out. Before we go, I want to point out something that I think is getting pretty funny. Scott Jensen, who's running as a Republican Minnesota gubernatorial candidate, has picked his running mate, Matt Burke, who is a Viking. He is an NFL player. He knows nothing about this. He is an NFL player. But he's now running. The quality isn't great, but listen to this.
Hi, I'm Matt Burke, running for Lieutenant Governor of the state of Minnesota, along with Dr. Scott Jensen.
And I'm pleased to be running with Matt Burke. Today, we want to talk about something that I think Matt would like to take the lead on.
So who does that sound like is at the top of the ticket? It sounds like Matt Burke is at the top of the ticket. So I guess maybe Casey Kasem could have pointed out Scott Jensen as one of the people doing the dumbest thing this week. I think he's being overshadowed by Matt Burke. Matt Burke is getting really cocky about this. He's kind of looks like he's just taking over the whole campaign and overshadowing the actual gubernatorial candidate, which I don't know, might be helpful because the actual gubernatorial candidate is kind of crazy. So anyway, I think our chances are great. Waltz is going to waltz right into his second term. This has been AM 950, The Matt McNeil Show with Todd Mickelson. We are the Progressive Voice of Minnesota. Matt will be back tomorrow. Thanks for listening. I had a blast. Hope you had some fun, too.